I'm now joined on the phone by Ciara Gill from A Helping Hand. Ciara, good morning to you and thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you? I'm just going to say it's a lending hand, Joe.
A lending hand, okay.
A lending hand.
And I beg your pardon. And do you remember that other word?
The advocacy word.
That's the one. That's the one I couldn't get the tongue around the other day. But anyway, it's nice to have you on the programme. Now,
it's nice to be here.
You're welcome. Now, I wanted to start, as we were saying the other day, if you could just tell us a little about yourself and where are you based?
So we are based in Coolock,
mm-hmm.
In and around Coolock and Airfield. And we've been based here for the last 8 years.
Eight years, right, that's fine. Now, as I was saying to you, your services where you go into the city centre and you're supplying meals and other services. And how many evenings do you go into the city centre?
So we go in every Monday evening and we go in from 7:30 to however long we are needed. And we all spend like all day cooking good home-cooked meals to bring in with us.
Mm-hmm. And how many people have you got cooking meals?
So we have the team of volunteers. So Ashley will cook, her husband Kieran will cook, mm-hmm. Agnes cooks, Brian cooks, Claire cooks, David, Lawrence and Caroline bring cakes and bread. And then we have we've a group of women from the inner city, Jackie and her pals, they'll all cook a dish and drop it in with her husband. We have another crew, Cara, out in Tally. She'll cook for us. I have a chef up in Holt, Orley. She cooks for me. I have ladies in Donnymead, and they'll cook for me. So the door does be going all day. I have a woman down in Westmead, and she'll bake me cakes and send them up with her husband.
Right. And what they're not all cooking the one type of meal. You were saying to me there, give us a rundown on the different types of meals that you have prepared.
So I would cook for about 150. So I'd make up three big catering trays of a 4-in-1 curry. So I'll do a chicken curry, and then I'll put shredded chicken and chicken balls in with that. Mm-hmm. And then Ashley will do pasta bake, and she's a lady, Monica, and she does lasagna for us. And then Agnes will make shepherd's pie, and they all know what's coming in as well. So they're all have you got the curry? Have you got the shepherd's pie? I've got the stew. My mum and dad make a stew. Brian will make big jumbo sausages and rolls and pasta bakes. He does a lovely salmon. So, and then we have a few vegetarian dishes as well, because we have a couple of vegetarians. And then we have sandwich makers. So we have other people scattered around the community, and they make us sandwiches. And even the kids get roped into making sandwiches in the houses.
Right. And what part of the city would you go to? Is there a certain section of the city that you operate from?
There is. So we operate on a Monday night from 7:30 at the Bank of Ireland on College Green, mm-hmm. just facing Trinity College under the arch. So we go there. Specifically, we used to be at the Central Bank, but when that got done up, we had to move. And it's easier for us and for homeless people to find us if we're in the one spot.
Yeah.
And every week.
And roughly what time would you start at in the city?
We start at 7:30, so I try and get in there for about 7:15, and then we have to set up all the tables and fill all the flasks with hot water and kind of get a bit of crowd control.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're ready to go, because by 7:30 everyone is starving.
Mm-hmm. And how long would you be there for, or does it depend on how many people?
It depends on how many people, and it depends on how much food we have. It swings and roundabouts, so some weeks we have too much food, and then what we'll do is we'll give out takeaway meals, or we'll drop it up to Merchant's Quay or one of the hostels, the Lighthouse, or wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can share. And it depends on the night. Some nights you could meet people that are genuinely suicidal, and you have to sit there with them, and you have to try and talk them through it, and just so they know there's someone there. And then you might have to try and link them in with services. Sometimes we meet ex-prisoners that are just coming out of prison, and they're homeless and they don't know where to go, and they don't know, like, they don't have a phone number to even ring, so we'd have to help them. A couple of weeks ago, we met a French girl who had came here to work, and she was waiting on her first payment, like, as our employed job, and she had nothing. And when we gave her a sandwich, she actually burst into tears.
Right.
That's how hungry she was. She hadn't eaten in 2 days. So we had to bring her to the Garda station because we couldn't leave her in on the streets of Dublin.
No,
like,
no.
She was vulnerable. So we brought her up to Pear Street Garda station, and they're brilliant up there. Like, they're really good with homeless people, and they're very accommodating. Like, so they took her in, and we had to get her the number for the hostels, and we had to link her in. We link in with, in a city, helping the homeless in town as well, and they provide an outreach service. So we're all trying to link in with each other behind the scenes, nearly. Yeah.
And what's the age group that would come to your service?
So it's a wide age group. Like, so you'd have, like, your teenagers that are, like, maybe 18, and then you'd have, like, families that are coming from hubs or B&Bs or emergency accommodation. They don't have cooking facilities. The food they'd be provided with might not be nutritious enough for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one night we had, like, this is many a night, like, but one particular night sticks out for me, that we had a little kid in front of us. She was about 6 in our school uniform, and she was clapping because we had pasta bake. She was so excited, like.
Right.
So, and then it goes all the way up into, like, 70s. Like, we meet men that are in their late 60s, 70s. We have a couple of women. They would be in, like, state-provided accommodation, but, like, that they don't get enough. And then we would have, like, a couple of older men and women that they would have, like, maybe, like, their own little place or whatever, but they can't afford to, like, keep themselves going. So we would bring in food parcels for them, and that would keep them going for a week, and then they'll come back to us then the following week, and we'll do it all again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a wide range of poverty, really.
Mm. It's I'm just thinking, what listening to what you're saying there about the food, like, I would have thought, like, me, ignorant me, would have been thinking, well, maybe you know, you're just providing tea and coffee and sandwiches, and in fact, it's a lot more. It's an awful lot more than that. And how is the finance? Mind me asking you.
So it's completely on donations. We don't deal with cash. That's kind of been our policy since the start, and it's gained us so much support over the years. So what we do is, so we have a butcher's account in Northside Shopping Centre, Dan O'Brien's, and if you want to help the homeless people, you go into Dan, and you can, like, throw, like, even a euro, whatever you can, and he'll in return give us the meat. So he'll give me the makings of the curry, he'll give Ashley the makings of whatever, he'll give the crew, and then the people that help us outside cooking, we provide them with the ingredients then. So it kind of takes the weight off, because a lot of people want to help.
Yeah.
Some people can't afford to help. So by us providing the ingredients, it means that we get much more support with people cooking, because we can't do it all ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
So, and then when it comes to anything else, it's purely donations.
Mm.
So, like, clothes, if we're running low on supplies, we have a wholesaler account as well in Leyden. And so that'll stock us up with, like, the bowls and the takeaway dishes and the knives and the forks and cups and all of that kind of stuff. And then when we need anything, we just put it up on our Facebook page and, like, appeal to the public. Can you, like, buy us sleeping bags? And someone will send me sleeping bags. Like, I've got women in the Philippines, in America, in New York, and they'll follow my page and send me a private, and it'll be all private, and they don't want any kind of recognition for it either.
Mm-hmm. Understand that. And naturally enough, you need transport to get into the city centre, so you're using your own transport as well.
Yeah.
And you're paying for that as well.
I drive the car, so I have all the stuff with me, and then Lawrence, he would take a couple of tables, and he takes all the clothes. And yeah, so we just use our own transport, but the way I see it is, we choose to do this.
Yeah.
So nobody asked us, and nobody made us. So, I mean, if it's going to cost me €20 in petrol, so be it, like.
Right. Just remind us, the butcher's name, the butcher's again is in Northside Shopping Centre.
It's Dan O'Brien's.
Dan O'Brien's.
Across from Super Value.
In Northside Shopping Centre. Now, are you the only group operating in the city centre doing this?
No.
You're not.
We were. So we would have been the fourth group, like, 8 years ago to set up a soup run. And then now, like, on average on a Monday night, like, I think there might be, like, 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, maybe more on the south side. That could be another one. But it could be 4 or 5.
Yeah, and
running.
Did you say to me, or did I ask you, sorry, how many people you'd cater for up to on a night?
That we could see anything up to 350 people on a Monday night.
Right. So if you're seeing 350 and you've got another 4 groups operating around the city, that's a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Looking for food. That's unbelievable.
It's a lot of poor people looking for food.
Yeah.
It's like, it would be a mixture of, like, homeless people, people in emergency, state-funded accommodation, and hotels, that kind of stuff. And then people that are just genuine on the poverty line, because the way we see it is, if you're standing in a queue in the middle of Dublin City, queuing for your dinner, you're hungry.
Yeah.
There'd be no other reason for you to be in that queue. Like, you know, some people ask us, oh, do people scam you? And I'm like, scam us for what? Like, a bowl of stew?
Understand. The CV, coronavirus, how did that affect you? Did it put a stop to it in for a while, or what?
It halted us. We were going through it, and to be honest, my attitude was, until they move me, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then myself and Ash, we upped it then to 2 nights before, with the COVID, we upped it to a Monday and a Friday night. And then on the last Friday night we went out, myself and Ashley took sick. And we thought we had COVID, so we had to isolate and be tested. And thank God we were negative. But I live with my parents. They're in their 70s.
Yeah.
My dad has a heart condition. He's only out of hospital since Christmas. And my mum's an asthmatic. So, you know, my mum was like, do what you need to do. But my dad was like, look, like, you have to prioritise here. And, you know, I know how much they mean to you. And I know you're going to be worried sick, but... you know, like, I'm your dad, basically. So it killed us to have to stop,
to
worry.
Yeah.
And the feeling like you weren't helping, or you didn't know what was going on, because, like, I'm like, I feel like I'm that mother sometimes.
Yeah.
And so we got in touch with the Sikh brothers, the Sikh temple out in Dublin 4, and they were cooking for the frontline staff. They are doing unbelievable work out there. And I asked them, could I link in with them? And was there any way they could cook hot meals for the homeless people? So there's a lad that goes into the GPO every night, Dougie, and he's been, like, feeding the homeless. So we make sure the hot meals get sent in to him. I make sure clothes get sent in. I send in water to most of the ones that are on the ground. I make sure they have water. If they need anything, I'll do an appeal for them. We can't directly be in there, but we're still making sure everybody is okay.
Yeah. And was there, did you notice whether there was a dip in numbers when the coronavirus started out first?
There would have been a dip, because I think it was like the, you know, like, get everyone off the street kind of, you know.
Yeah.
They can't be out there.
Yeah.
I think it was more, they can't be seen out there.
Yeah.
So they were...
And
offered alternative accommodation. So some of them would have been, if they thought you were going to be positive, you are being quarantined, or you are going to a hotel and you are being quarantined. If not, you are being provided with the free phone number, which everyone is provided with when you're homeless, and then you ring and you see, can you get a bed? So for the first maybe week, there would have been only about, like, maybe 30 rough sleepers, people sleeping rough on the street. And now, like, there's an increase of about 150 people, because the hostels aren't equipped to deal with the numbers. They're already overrun with people. So you can imagine, with a disease in play and you're in a hostel that's overrun, like, I would take my chances on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to be infected. We're finding a lot more people are taking their chances on the street.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin of the dip in numbers, Have you seen an increase now? Because a lot of people, like a lot of people, have lost their jobs and may never get them back. So, do you see an increase then coming to you because of that?
Huge increase. So on a Monday night we go into town, but from Tuesday to Sunday we feed everyone and anyone that needs it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have the butcher's account. So since COVID, I would have seen people that would have never asked anyone for help with anything. And I could tell by how embarrassed they were to even be asking. Some people I actually had to offer, like had to message them and say, listen, I know you're actually losing your job there. You know, we're here to help you or whatever. And they'd be mortified taking it. But like we would insist on it. So we've seen a huge increase. So we could be feeding up to like 7 families a day from our butcher's account.
Right.
And like before, we would have been feeding about 4 families a day maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've seen a jump like. And then we provide a rehab centre in a drugs rehabilitation centre. We provide them with food as well. And we try and knock on food to services that need it without them even knowing that we're sending it.
Right. Kira, how did you get involved in this? Or why do you do this?
So, I was a very materialistic person and I believed that material things made you happy. So, I thought that by being a hairdresser and saving my ass off for 18 months and to be told that I didn't qualify for a mortgage and that I didn't earn enough. So I kind of had a bit of a, I'm saying nervous breakdown, but a bit of a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't cope with the fact that I had worked so hard and still I wasn't, like it was like I wasn't good enough to get a house. So I kind of suffered really bad with my mental health.
Your confidence was destroyed by that, in a way.
Destroyed.
Yeah.
Destroyed. It was just like, what was the point of literally living on nothing for 18 months, saving my ass off and doing everything by the book, everything right. They told me, like I actually met with bank managers, they told me how to save. And then when I went back for the mortgage, they more or less laughed. And it was like, oh my God, you don't know what that's taken for me to sacrifice my whole life to save.
Yeah.
So I was... devastated from me, and thank God for my parents, they were there for me. And I just thought, you know what, there just has to be more to this life than material things, because I'm not happy. I didn't get what I wanted. I even think if I did get the house, I probably still wouldn't have been happy, because I was searching for the wrong things. And I just, a friend was going in feeding the homeless, and like growing up, I'm the youngest of 5, and like all my family would be quite like empathetic to help anyone. And like even walking through town with my brothers and my mad, they'd always stop with homeless people, they'd always talk to them, you know, try and help them out. And I just thought, you know, I think I'm going to give that a shot. So I went in and we started it, and I just thought, oh my God, like I'm in this bad of a mental state, but there's people that are way worse off than me, and I could be a whole lot worse off if I hadn't got my family to support me and stuff. So I kind of just got a bug for it, and then it kind of just fell into my lap, and my parents were laughing, and they were like, you're not consistent with anything, you're not going to stick this out. And then 8 years in, I'm still here, and they wrote me in every week to cook and do whatever it is, and it gives me way more. Like people always say, oh, you're so good. And I'm like, you don't even know me. You don't, like, if you met me, like, 15 years ago, you wouldn't say that, you know, because I was spite rotten.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's my time to give back.
Would you say this has saved you in some way, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Mentally, definitely has saved me.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And I feel like I didn't really have, like hairdressing was my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then that got destroyed, because I didn't get what I wanted out of, and I just lost the passion for it. And then I went back to college and I started studying social care and about like humans and interacting and how we walk and psychology and stuff. And I just thought, wow, like this is another world. And yeah, I do think it saved me, and like I definitely get more out of it than I give.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Kira, listen, we're going to let you go, okay?
Yeah.
Now, before you go, I have about six pens in the back office there, and I didn't come in with one of them. So just give us, just give us the butchers again. It's in Northside Shopping Centre, across from Super Value, and the name is
Dan O'Brien.
Dan O'Brien's. I should remember O'Brien's, my mother's maiden name. Dan O'Brien in Northside Shopping Centre. And you said you had a Facebook page.
We do. It's A Lending Hand on Facebook.
A Lending Hand on Facebook. So, folks, Dan O'Brien's butcher shop, Northside Shopping Centre, if you'd like to help out, A Lending Hand. And the Facebook page is A Lending Hand. Simple as that. Kira, look after yourself. You've definitely opened my eyes or whatever to what goes on in the city centre. And as I say, you're looking after 350 people, and you're probably even more than that. And you're not the only group in there, so that's a lot of people that are looking for the services.
A lot of poor people.
Well, look at. Thanks very much for taking the time to take the call, and maybe in a couple of months' time we'll get back to you again when this coronavirus settles down, and we'll see how you're getting on. Is that okay?
That'd be perfect. Thanks for having us on.
You're
Dad.
Very
Appreciate
welcome.
It.
Take care of yourself,
take
Kira.
Take care.
There you go.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, that's Kira Gilder, and...